my friends. It's Monday, May the 4th, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, your weekly wake and bake, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. And it goes down smooth. Hey! On this week's smoke session, let's talk about the bloodless coup of the American fascists. But we don't need left-wing Jesus in politics either. And there's a reason we're not taught about the labor movement. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
May the 4th be with you.
I'm a Star Wars nerd.
May the 4th be with you.
Star Wars geek.
Oh, Star Wars jokes.
May the 4th.
It's May the 4th.
That was from Star Wars.
Yes, I said it. Happy Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. Yes, I love the puns. May the 4th be all the Star Wars stuff's out there. I got to admit, I haven't, you know, been a Star Wars nerd for a long time. I haven't followed all the new stuff, the Mandalorian and the Grogu and the Andor and the Rogue One. And hell, I don't even really think I've seen the last three Star Wars trilogy movies, the Rise of Skywalker ones. Maybe I did. I don't know. Didn't really leave a mark on me. But what really did impress me was seeing Star Wars on its opening day. Yes, I am one of those Gen X guys who can say I saw Star Wars on opening day. And I remember it was like the mall theater, I think, something like that. But it was a situation in which Mom could just let me and my brother Matt go to the theater alone. So I think like she was shopping and then she let us go to the theater by herself. But this was back in the day when you could just let, you know, let's see, 77. So I was 9 and my brother was 6. Where you could just let a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old go off on their own into a theater. Anyway, we went in to see Star Wars. And I'll tell you, folks, when you see when you hear that John Williams score and those opening credits, that was like unlike anything you'd ever seen in a movie before. Just the credits, the way it was at an angle. And I know it's like, it's so iconic to Star Wars now, it's just a, you know, taken for granted. But when you were going in to see a movie, and there were other kind of sci-fi movies, I guess Close Encounters had come out before Star Wars, maybe I'm wrong on my timeline there, but there was other, you know, space stuff, and Star Trek had existed. I'd been watching Star Trek on syndication. I was a total Star Trek nerd, but you know, Star Trek of the 60s was, you know, like a high school play as far as its sets and its special effects go. When you saw Star Wars as a kid, 9 years old, and me and my brother, we used to like to sit right in the front row. I don't know why little kids like that. Well, you get right, so the screen's super big and your neck is all, you know, yanked back, right? But that initial opening credits, and then the little ship, you know, Princess Leia's ship that comes over your top right corner, and the laser's coming after it, and then the huge Star Destroyer, and that low bass rumble as it's coming over the top of you, and it just fills the entire screen, and the detail on it, the model. I mean, compared to looking at the USS Enterprise on the 60s Star Trek, man, you saw that Star Wars Star Destroyer. It's like, oh my God. And from then on, it was like the next hour and a half or however long it was, just in total film ecstasy as a little kid, getting to see Star Wars on its opening day. And of course, I have absolute disdain for what George Lucas has done to the original movies afterwards by adding, you know, Jabba the Hutt digitally and all these little extras that he added digitally takes away from the movie. And of course, the most important sinful thing he did, and we all understand, is that Han shot first.
The one who looks like Winona Ryder?
Winona Ryder, she's in.
So I bumped you for Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder is Jewish.
In the meantime, there's pint-sized pixie and darling of the indie movie scene, Winona Ryder!
Here's a post that amused me on Blue Sky I had to share with you. I'll just read it. From the band Jamiroquai. Jamiroquai frontman J.K., says that Winona Ryder wore him out with her nonstop demands for sex. The 35-year-old singer said, although he enjoyed his brief relationship with the Hollywood star, he was left shattered trying to keep up with her. He confessed, quote, she has these enormous breasts, bigger than they look on film. She did have this habit of constantly wanting to play hide the sausage. It was exhausting, end quote.
Yeah.
Other complaints from JK, this lobster is far too buttery, and the suspension on my Lamborghini is just slightly off.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
All right, gonna try something new on the podcast. I've got a new segment here for you. We're gonna call this Meanwhile Here in America. Actually, we should call it Meanwhile Here in the United States. Let's do it with that. Meanwhile Here in the United States. All right, so on this segment, I'm just going to give you some of the science that I've seen come across my Blue Sky feed and tell you how the United States is keeping pace with the rest of the nation. Here we go. Pancreatic cancer mRNA vaccine shows lasting results in an early trial. Scientists caution that more research is needed, but nearly all of the patients who responded to the personalized vaccine are still alive 6 years later. Meanwhile, here in the United States, the head of our health service is a raccoon penis collecting psychopath who's encouraging parents to have measles parties to give all their kids immunity.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
China tackles its rural labor crisis with the Hongqiu T-70, an autonomous electric tractor that operates for 6 hours with remarkable precision, a game changer for agriculture. Meanwhile, here in the United States, John Deere will sell you a tractor that locks you out of repairing it.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
930 miles of range and 10 to 80% charging in under 4 minutes. China unveils the future of electric cars. At the Beijing Motor Show, Chinese battery manufacturer CATL could transform the electric vehicle market. Meanwhile, here in the United States, our 3-ton diesel pickups that get 15 miles to a gallon now have 16-inch touchscreens.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Switzerland is putting solar panels on all the empty space between train tracks. If done in the United Kingdom, this would take 20 million solar panels and would provide 8 gigawatts of electricity. Meanwhile, here in the United States, you can catch the Amtrak from Portland to Seattle in the same time it takes to drive the I-5 slog from Portland to Seattle.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
If the strategy works, the South will have all the odds in its favor.
And the South will rise again.
Now every rebel snake in the South will crawl out of its hidden den into the daylight.
The South will rise again.
The South will settle it in its own time and in its own way.
Well, my main story this week has to be the bloodless coup of the American fascists, also known as the South has risen again. Last week, we got the decision handed down by the SCROTUS, the Supreme Court Republicans of the United States, the 6-3 decision, the 6 Republicans against the 3 liberal appointees that decided the Calais case out of Louisiana, which pretty much knocked out the last remaining plank of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. The South has risen again, and they are now able to gerrymander away all black voices representing them in the United States federal government. And it'll go farther than that. It'll go to state races and local races as well. Because of this history in the United States of the South and the fascists in power who want to maintain white Christian Protestant nationalism. It's the racism. It's a holy war. It's a racial holy war to these people that didn't end at the surrender at Appomattox. That was just the agreement between white people to stop shooting at each other. The war never ended. The slavers' insurrection of 1860 has never ended. It has continued. It's been a slow-moving coup since then. We thought we won. We got them to surrender at Appomattox. And we got these amendments written, 13th, 14th, 15th amendments. ending slavery, you know, except for prisoners. You lock someone up, you can do all the slavery you like. And so, of course, the first thing they did is made all these laws in the South and elsewhere to make sure they could criminalize black men as much as they possibly could so they could lock them up and then, of course, use them as slaves, as their God intended. And we passed other amendments to try to make sure they had the right to vote, they could get represented. We had, for a short time, this Reconstruction, a 12-year period, where we did see black representation. We did see increased numbers of representatives and governors, and state representatives in legislatures. Black people finally being represented. But that, of course, wouldn't stand in their racial holy war, so they came up with Jim Crow and poll taxes and literacy tests and grandfather clauses and all sorts of ways to disenfranchise black people. The black people had built this country and are responsible for a large part of its culture. This continued until, of course, the Compromise of 1877, which once again, the white people got together and agreed, hey, we'll go ahead and take the federal troops out of the South and let you go ahead and go back to the way your God intended things to be run, with white people in power and black people knowing their place, being enslaved. So long as you let our guy be president, okay, shake hands, deal, and Reconstruction was over. The Jim Crow era was in full flower, and if you look at the charts, you can see the black representation just dwindle, plummet to virtually nothing. Until World War II and the integration of black forces in the military and the contributions of black soldiers to helping defeat the fascists abroad, who were supposedly bad guys because they treated people horribly because of their race, came back to the United States of America to face far more oppression than they were seeing in Europe, where they were greeted as liberators, where the white French people and were happy to see them, and the Jews they liberated from the camps were happy to see them. They come back to America, and it's back to Jim Crow. It's back to separate but equal. It's back to the back of the bus. And these black people had fought and marched and went on strike. And I saw we had a May Day strike. Woohoo! We had one day off. Woohoo! We didn't buy anything from Amazon for a day. Oh, good job, white folks. Take a look back at the Montgomery bus boycott, where people, black people, were walking miles to work, getting up 3, 4 in the morning to walk miles to work for years. Months, at least. I don't know how many years it was. I think it was a year or two, though. But a very long time, not a day, that black people marched and faced dogs and fire hoses and the Klan burning crosses in their lawns and bombing their churches and being hanged from trees. Until finally enough white people's eyes were opened to create a schism within our politics of white folks. Because there was all this bipartisanship among white folks for so long, when we didn't have to talk to the black folks and the brown folks and the Asian folks and the gay folks and all the women folks. But just white guys, we found all sorts of ways to be bipartisan with each other. But as Pam Keith put it on her Blue Sky feed the other day, and I posted a link in my thread, bipartisanship always meant a way for white people to agree to how to throw black people under the bus. Once the civil rights movement came to a head behind Dr. King and others in the mid-60s, it was too much to bear, and finally there was a schism in the politics of white people. And Lyndon Baines Johnson signed away the white South regeneration, he said, by signing the Civil Rights Act. Even then, after the Civil Rights Act, there was still chicanery going on in the South that tried to prevent black people from getting representation. But at least with the Voting Rights Act and the enforcement of it, we saw the increasing black representation from the South. We had the creation of these majority-minority districts, so that you couldn't just slice away the black neighborhood, so that they couldn't vote for a black representative. They had the preclearance, so that all these southern states that had proven by their secession from the Union and their continued use of Jim Crow laws for decades after, for generations after, had proven to the rest of us they could not be trusted to give black people their political representation fairly. And so there was preclearance. You required them, if they made any changes to their electoral laws, we had to approve it first federally. That was cleared away a few years ago. by the scrotus. That was one of the legs they cleared out. Now they cleared out the last one where you can't have the majority-minority districts. So now these states, and immediately this comes down from the scrotus, Louisiana's governor puts a suspension on the current election, which is already underway. People have already sent in absentee ballots. Military have already mailed in their ballots from overseas. Nope, we're going to have a do-over. We're going to have a do-over because the scrotus says now we can write the black people out of our legislative districts, so we have to have a do-over. Immediately given the green light to go back to the way things were supposed to be, white and delightsome. Make sure that we can get rid of all that black representation. So the South has risen again. They got what they wanted. And I got to say, the white Christian nationalists, the Nazis, the American fascists are doing quite well. They got rid of Roe v. Wade. They put your women back in your place. And I remember, oh, Rovember is coming. They got rid of Roe v. Wade and the women will rise up. Oh, Rovember is coming. We'll show him at the polls. No, we didn't. Because again, amongst the white men who get disproportionate power in this country, that's what they wanted, putting the women back in their place. And for too many of the white women who still vote in majority for Trump, their proximity to whiteness, their proximity to that supremacy was more important than whether or not their daughter would have any right to terminate her pregnancy. Because, you know, the blue state women and the women, and to be fair, the red state women in the big cities, they know that if they got enough money, they can just go off to a blue state and get the abortion if they have to. Or they can order those little abortion pills, the mifepristone. So really, what's the harm in having some poor black and brown women and poor white women bleed out in some ER parking lot because they're having a miscarriage and the doctors are afraid to do anything about it because it might be an illegal abortion? So we can get one for our kid. Except now they're taking that away. They're going after mifepristone now. They've got an emergency injunction nationwide to stop distribution of the mifepristone pill. Because this is a racial holy war to them. This is their white Christian nationalism writ large. Women are supposed to be the bearers of the children. It's not like we don't have novels about this, like The Handmaid's Tale, like The Man in High Castle. There's all sorts of science fiction dystopia that has proven to be somewhat of a guidebook to these people as to what the United States of America should be. So they're coming after the women. They're putting the women back in their place. They're coming after the immigrants and make sure the brown people are kicked out. We've had no net new immigration in the United States except for white South Africaners. How much clearer do they need to make it for people? The women, the immigrants, now they've taken care of the blacks, got the uppity blacks put back in their place, unable to vote for their own representatives. And the gays are coming. They'll get to Obergefell. It's a little tougher with the gays because there's some rich gays funding them. You know, like the Peter Thiel types. It's a little tougher with the gays. We gotta work that one, but we'll get to that. They'll get to that, believe me. Because this is spiritual to them. This is a holy war to them. And there was a discussion I heard on my podcast, because I listen to a lot of them from the left, from the middle-ish. And I'm going to call the bulwark kind of middle rightish. This is one from the bulwark with Tim Miller, who's speaking with Adam Kinzinger, who was famously on the 9/11 or not 9/11, the January 6th commission with Liz Cheney. And so Kinzinger is one of these, you know, stalwart conservative types who likes to reminisce about, you know, real conservatism and not, you know, what these MAGA types are all about. And Miller's kind of the same way. They're both neocons or rehabbed neocons. And so they're having this discussion and it centers around Trump and Putin and Netanyahu and how they have such disparate wants geopolitically, right? Like Trump and Netanyahu are at war with Iran. But Iran is getting support from Russia, and Russia's at war with Ukraine, and you know all the complex, you know, geopolitical interconnections they're talking about that should make them enemies. And yet they have this affinity for one another, because there's something that ties together not just Trump and Netanyahu and and Putin, but also, you know, the right generally, and Orban and all that. And so Kinzinger and Miller are discussing this, and Kinzinger's just like so close to getting it. Just so, so close.
If you put yourself in the mind of kind of, I'll just say, I guess the right generally, the conspiracy right, but like for 30 years, you've been programmed to believe through Fox News and some other news, you've been programmed to believe that the real enemy is the left, right? The liberals, you know, the wokes, that's the real enemy. And all of a sudden you look in Russia, you know, oppressed the Chechens, Russia, you know, fights the Muslims. Obviously Israel does.
Anti-gay,
right? Gay marriage is illegal there. And I think there is something among the right that unites them on that front. I mean, it's like a cultural culture war now, I think, just supersedes any war.
And that culture
war
is?
Supersedes any difference. It's why they had such affection for Orban. And I really think that there is a kind of a brotherhood, if you will, that exists because, you know, therefore traditional values.
And those values are just so damn close. It's like they're Nazis. like you don't need any more explanation than that. And it's frustrating that there's those kind of guys on the right or the center, the centrist, independent, whatever the types that have this feeling like the right was fooled or programmed by Fox News. No, Fox News has cultivated it, sure. Cultivated something that was already there, though. Okay? Here's another one that I caught, a clip that came across Blue Sky. Someone's interviewing David French, the conservative commentator, who also has somewhat of a revelation.
Are you a conservative?
Yes. Now, I have changed on a couple of things. I have absolutely changed in my perception of the severity, lingering severity of race problems in this country. I've absolutely changed on that. And a lot of that is due to a very, very distinct and personal experience. We adopted a child from Ethiopia. This might sound super naive, but when we adopted our youngest daughter, I did not have in my mind that she was going to come to my community and have a substantially different experience as a child than my two older kids. But by golly, she had a substantially different experience. There was not a school that she went to where she was not called the N-word repeatedly.
Wow.
There was a point where I picked her up after a high school football game. This was in Nashville at a game at Montgomery Bell Academy, one of the highest end schools in all of Middle Tennessee. This is a very wealthy school. We went to pick her up and she was shaking. And her friend, who was a Latina, was shaking as well. And I was like, what happened? And she said a truck full of guys was screaming the N-word at us and drove straight for us. And they just swerved away at the very last second.
Holy cow.
All of a sudden, I realized that I'd been in a bubble.
Oh, really?
And that my white, educated, upper middle class bubble in the South had really intentionally screened out racism.
Yeah, folks. It's the racism, stupid. It's the racism. It comes right down to Nazism. It's fascism. It's racism. It's blood and soil. It's those guys from the Trump rally a while back, the two white, fat white guys, Gen X guys, look like me out there with t-shirts that say, I'd rather be Russian than Democrat. And it's time, and on the left, amongst the white folks on the left, the black folks and brown folks have known this for years. And again, I want to go back to that Pam Keith thread on this. She says, I need you to fully grasp and understand this. Black people have always understood that the bottom line goal of the GOP is, was, and has been, since the 1960s, I'd argue earlier, the restoration of whites-only political and financial power in this country. We have always known that they gave up slavery, segregation, redlining, Jim Crow, and racism in employment because they were forced to. And given an opportunity to go back to the way it was, they happily would. We have known that, and we have warned you about that for decades, which is why we recoiled and shuddered when people who claimed to be on our side became obsessed with appealing to the people who hate us. Bipartisan in our politics almost always means agree to throw black people under the bus in some way. When you reflexively and without a second thought lionize Charlie Kirk, an openly and unabashed hater of black people, it threw us for a loop. Why the fuck would our team do that? Why? Was it supposed to win them white votes? So, yeah. And she goes on this screed, and it's a good one. It's in my Blue Sky feed. You can find it under Pam Keith DC at Blue Sky Social. And she's absolutely right. Like this. And that's the thing, is that like among white folks, like the worst thing you can, maybe not the worst, but one of the worst things that you can call a white person is racist. Like that's meant to be that's you're openly a bad guy. So they'll go out. We will go out of our way to find ways to look at other white people being racist and find a way for them not to be racist so we don't have to call them racist. That's what's going on here. Okay. This is the South has risen again. And the traditional values they uphold are racism. It's a racial holy war. It's a Christian nationalism thing. And they will quickly, the minute you start to call them racist, they will quickly and vehemently try to deflect that by bringing up their black friend, the black person who's the racist along with them, which this is the hard thing to get some people to understand, is that racism isn't necessarily, I'm a white person that hates black people. Racism is, I support a structure in which white people will be the default and white people will have the say. Right. Racism is a system that depends on race. OK, now you can be prejudiced against people and not be racist. You can be racist and you will be definitely prejudiced. So anyway. On the right, there's this failure to call it out what it is. On the left, among white Democrats, there is a failure to recognize who they are now and what this battle is. The right understands their side. The right understands that they are the party of white, Christian, straight people. White, Protestant, Christian, straightness. And their goal is to establish white, Protestant, Christian, straightness in our society and our laws. And our laws should favor the goals of white, Christian, Protestant, straightness. The goals of reproducing more white, Christian, Protestant, straight people, and making sure that white, Christian, Protestant, straight people are in positions of power and leadership and control capital in this country. That's the explicit goal of these people. Oh, I forgot patriarchy. Let's put patriarchy in there too. You can exchange the Protestant for patriarchy, keep the P, whatever. That's their explicit goal. It's their mission from God. They're literally the Blues Brothers. They're on a mission from God here. So rules, norms, expectations, morality, ethics mean nothing compared to the mission from God. And all those who oppose the mission from God are evil and must be vanquished. That is where they're coming from. We need to, on the left, understand where we are coming from now. And white folks, it ain't about us. It ain't about us. We are now, if you want to make a choice, because in America you only get two, and then you can bitch about all that, about that all we like, and the only way we ever change that reality is to make sure that the left side wins, because they're the only side interested in making sure that there could be more electoral choices, but they have to win first to enact those changes. Your choices now are right or left, and the right is white Christian patriarchy nationalism. The left, multicultural secular democracy. That's what it has to be. We have to explicitly be the Star Trek party. They're the Nazi party. We're the Star Trek party. We want Sulu on the bridge. We want Uhura on the bridge. We want gay people on the bridge. We want bisexual, transgender people. We want immigrants. We're all about exploring brave, strange new worlds and seeking out new life and new civilizations and boldly going where no one has gone before. We're the party of science and believing in studies and logic and reason. We need to start making that explicit, and we need to start attacking the other side accurately for what they are. They promote ignorance and superstition. They promote racism and hatred and fear of the other. They are anti-Christian. It's time for us to recognize what our side is and go full bore in that direction. And I'm afraid it's going to take more than one day off or one march in the streets where we all take pictures of our signs and post them on social media. And I'm as guilty as the rest of us. I'm doing that too. But it's going to take more than that. Right now, it's going to take winning in 2026. Because this may be, if the Democrats do not win this House election, it may be the last House election they win. Because now, with this decision, the voting rights decision, and the previous decisions before that, gerrymandering's pretty much on the table. You can pretty much draw your state any way you want. So, we've already seen the race to the bottom on this, where Texas gerrymandered 5 seats in the mid-district, and so California went to the voters and redistricted themselves 5 seats, and Virginia went and got themselves 4, and now Florida's going to go get 4, and then now Louisiana's going to eke out 1. And so, this is basically a race to see who can completely gerrymander their states. And so, I did some, you know, spitball calculations on this, figured out a little bit of it, and if you look at the states that have Democratic or Republican trifectas, a trifecta state is one where the governor and the state house and the state senate, whatever it's called, assembly or senate, whatever, are the same party. So Republicans completely have the governor and the legislature, or vice versa, Democrats have it all, right? And so when you look at that, there's, of course, the West Coast states and the East Coast states, Illinois and then New Mexico and Colorado, that make up your blue states that have governor, Senate, House, all in the same control. And then all your interior red states that you can think of your red state map that have their trifecta of Republican control, like Idaho, for example. So in this scenario where you can gerrymander the hell out of your state, we'd have to assume the eventual goal has to be to make your state 100% your party when it comes to the representation in the House. Like California would draw 55 House districts that would all be Democrats and 0 Republicans. And Idaho would draw, well, Idaho doesn't have to change its drawing any. It's going to be all Republican anyway. But you get my point. So I did the math on this, and it turns out that if all the blue states 100% gerrymandered their state, they could lock down 40% of the House. And if the current red states completely gerrymandered their state, now, this is kind of a bonus for the blue states because they haven't completely gerrymandered, whereas the red states have pretty much already done so, aside from those southern states that were forced to create some black districts. But now they'll be able to write the black people out. After they do that, those states will be able to lock down also 40% of the House. So that leaves 20% of the House seats that sit in what are called the swing states, which are the states that have, you know, a split legislature, half of it's Republican, half Democrat, or they've got like an all Republican legislature, but a Democratic governor like Kansas, right? So those states might not be able to do a full-on gerrymander, and you'd be left fighting for those last 20% of the House seats. But those remaining states look to me much more likely to go toward the Republicans. I mean, you're talking states like Kansas and Kentucky and North Carolina, that are Arizona, Nevada, they're going to tilt kind of red. So this can't be good for Democrats. This race to completely gerrymandering states can't be good for Democrats in their House representation. So they're going to have to win in 2026. But you know what that's going to be? The next 2 years with House control and Donald Trump still president is just basically going to be stopping the bleeding. That's all 2026 and 27 are going to be about, stop the bleeding of Trumpism. All right, so then we have to move on to 2028 and then win the White House and the House and the Senate. Because also keep in mind, Thomas and Alito are pretty old on the SCROTUS. So what comes around here? The elections aren't until November. Currently, Republicans hold the House and the Senate. Do you suppose within the next 3-4 months, you see a lot of urging for Alito and Thomas to retire so Trump can appoint 2 more Supreme Court justices before the next election so he has control of the Senate so he can get his 2 more 40-year-olds on the bench so we can have a Supreme Court where 5 out of 9 of the justices are Trump appointees? A majority of the Supreme Court could be MAGA in the next few months. But even if that doesn't happen, let's suppose we win the House in 2026. Who knows what happens with the Senate? There's still that call for those 2 guys to retire in Trump's last 2 years. If we haven't won the Senate, he might get them through. If we have won the Senate, do the Democrats have the balls to pull a Mitch McConnell and deny any hearings on new Supreme Court nominees, even if it's 2 of them for a 2-year span? I don't know, but let's say they do. All right. So now we get to 2028. Democrats have to win the presidency, the House, and the Senate to even start fixing the SCROTUS. So maybe there's 2 seats open and the new Democratic president with the Democratic Senate gets to nominate 2 liberals and now it's a 5-4 liberal court, maybe. All right, so we move forward to the 5-4 court in 2028. Now we can start addressing the Voting Rights Act and the Dobbs with the reproductive rights and Bruin with gun control and all those kind of things, maybe, but I really think that for Democrats to get anything done, to even try to get us back on track to 2015, which I consider the high watermark of our civil rights in America, the passage, you know, the Obergefell decision, where gay people finally had the right to get married. I think that's as far as we've come. That's the high watermark of our civil rights in America. Because since 2015, since 2016, and Trump coming down the escalator, it's been nothing but losing rights. To even get back to 2015, Democrats are going to have to win and have control of the Congress, both chambers, for 3 successive Democratic terms. It's going to take 12 years of total Democratic control to get us back on track in this country. You know, something that hasn't happened since World War II, since the Great Depression, since FDR strung together 3 straight complete terms and had complete control of the House and the Senate. We were so successful in those 12 years of complete Democratic control, they had to pass the 22nd Amendment to stop presidents from being elected more than twice. Because we were so effective. In fact, a Democratic 2-term president has never passed power on to a Democratic president-elect in my lifetime. Let me say that again. A Democratic 2-term president has never passed power to a Democratic president-elect in my lifetime. Yes, FDR was a 4-term president, but he didn't pass power to a president-elect. He died. And the vice president was made president, right? And the same thing with Kennedy and LBJ, even though Kennedy was a 1-term president. You have to go back to Andrew Jackson, the 7th president of the United States. You have to go back to Andrew Jackson serving 2 terms as a Democrat and then passing power on to the president-elect after him, was it Polk? Don't remember. To get to 3 straight Democratic terms, and I'm sorry, Democrats pre-Civil War weren't Democrats, they were Republicans. They were, Andrew Jackson's not exactly the Democrat you want to, you know, laud. So, yeah, that's what it's going to take. Something that's completely unprecedented in United States history. The left maintaining total federal control for 12 years. But who knows? Maybe Donald Trump and MAGA and this fascism and the speed at which the pot has been boiling will awaken the frogs this time. Maybe we'll recognize how bad the other side actually is, and we'll recognize they're not our friends across the aisle, and we don't have good faith discussions with our Republican colleagues, that we recognize they are the representatives of white, Christian, patriarchal, Nazi racism in this country. They are a cancer that needs to be eradicated from our body politic. They are the vestigial appendages of our birth as a democracy, the horrific original sins that of compromise we had to make with slavers in order to create this nation. And it's time to finally excise it, finally undo it, and finally move forward. There are only two paths left. It's Nazi Germany or Star Trek.
Mr. Chairman, I stand for the separation of church and state.
Whatever happened to separation of church and state?
But isn't your precious separation of church and state a part of that freedom?
I try to keep the separation of church and state.
These days, separation of church and state has been reduced to a catchphrase.
Get ready to do the whole separation of church and state dance.
While it is the racism, I believe, that's foundational to what's going on the right, there is the religious aspect to it that I don't want to ignore either, because I think this is part of what hamstrings us on the left from being able to attack the right effectively. And it's sharing a God with them in our politics. So, as you know, James Tallarico is the Democratic nominee for the Senate in the state of Texas. And I sure do want him to win. I want the Democrats to control the Senate and to be able to win a seat in Texas and deny either John Cornyn or Ken Paxton, who would be odious, to deny them the seat is absolutely my goal, 100%. And from what I've seen of James Tallarico, he seems like a decent fellow with good politics. However, I do have a slight bit of worry. Now, to be fair, the clip I'm about to play for you, Tallarico is speaking at a church. Okay, so the context does matter in that case, but I just want to play the clip and then give you my thoughts on this.
We are living in an era of corruption. When I say corruption, I don't just mean illegal activity. I mean corruption in the deeper sense, the rotting of something from the inside. Politicians serving billionaire mega donors instead of their constituents. That's political corruption. The top 1% owning more wealth than the entire middle class. That's economic corruption. For-profit social media algorithms sowing division in our communities and turning neighbor against neighbor. That's social corruption. Our systems are rotting from the inside out. The ties that bind us together are unraveling. The most powerful people in this country are profiting off our pain, profiting off our division, profiting off our disconnection from one another. This is, at its root, a spiritual crisis, and it will require a spiritual solution.
No, this is a democratic crisis, and it will require a democratic solution. The solution for the infiltration of our government by this right-wing religious Nazism is not the infiltration of our government by some sort of left-wing Jesus either. This is where I have the problem with having religion in our politics, is it gives cover to the people on the other side who are using religion to oppress. They use the Bible to dictate what their religion should be. You're going to come in here and start saying this is a spiritual crisis, implying that there needs to be some sort of spiritual solution. If we were all better people, if we all just went to church and prayed to Jesus, then we wouldn't write algorithms for MEGA to be able to addict kids to social media. And the 1% wouldn't have more wealth. And if we were all just good people, no. That gets us back to the way that the founders envisioned this country that would be all run by honorable men. And we'd all respect norms and values and ethics. And we've seen how well that worked out. No, the goal here is a secular government that is answerable to the people, not to God, not to anyone's interpretation of what God is or what God wants. It's what the people want. Now, again, he's at a church. So if you want to argue that it requires the people in your church to look within themselves to support people on the left so that are trying to fight for equal representation and a secular democracy that protects all religions, then great. And I have heard Tallarico in the past talk about this, where he says the separation of church and state is more to protect the church than to protect the state. I think it's an equal balance of protecting both, but regardless, I don't think he's necessarily a bad guy in this respect. I'm talking more general about the religion in our politics altogether, whether it be left-wing or right-wing. If there needs to be a spiritual reawakening in this country, it needs to be a spirit of civics, a spirit of patriotism and duty to one another, a spirit of shared sacrifice, a spirit of democracy, a spirit of diversity and inclusion and equity and welcoming all. That's what I'm for. When I see Senate candidates in ecumenical robes speaking at churches talking about spiritual reclamation of the nation, it makes my hair stand up on end. Maybe I'm overreacting. And again, I do want to see a senator from Texas be a Democrat. That'll be a great thing. But I warn you that the solution to right-wing religion is not left-wing religion. The solution is to get religion out of our politics altogether.
I think what we have to do is to find out from the American worker what he wants the most, and then we have to translate it back to him in terms of the labor movement as a whole.
I want to see a labor movement take root.
Together, the American labor movement will never be vanquished!
I think it's a sad day for the labor movement of this country.
I have long had respect for the labor movement.
So keeping along the lines of a new civic renovation and revolution in this country, I'm thinking of this post that I saw on my Blue Sky feed where a guy was pointing out how crazy it is that country music is now about respecting authority. You think about the outlaw country guys of the past, you know, your Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Merle Haggard, Johnny Paycheck, Kris Kristofferson, those type of guys are not exactly boot-licking, cop-loving guys. So what has happened here? The idea that redneck, the Appalachian redneck, now refers to a rural white Republican type guy is crazy if you know anything about history in America. And that's the thing, is we purposefully are not taught our history in America. And again, I'm going to speak to the white folks out there, because in the past couple of segments I've been talking about this need to understand that there's two parties now, the Star Trek party and the Nazi party. And the Star Trek party does include white people. Captain Kirk's a white guy. Okay, there's plenty of room for us too. Okay, but it requires respecting and including diverse voices. And that's what makes America so great. That's what I really wish that the other side understood, is that the greatness of America is that we're not a monoculture. Is that we have all this great diversity in the country and all these different minds and cultures working together. And we need to reinstill this civic virtue of what it means to be an American and who it is our enemies are. And we used to understand this. I kind of mentioned in a previous rant there about the civil rights movement and keeping us all segregated and separate, and how prior to the civil rights movement, there was a bipartisanship in politics, because politics was just white guys. So white guys could find ways to compromise with each other on things that were important to white guys. But what used to be important, what used to be understood, was that there was this class involvement as well in our politics. And that there was an upper class that was always trying to exploit the lower class, that were always trying to gain wealth on the backs of labor. And so when I talk about Democrats needing to find this new civic virtue, I think we just need to look back to our own history from about 1870 to 1930 and to look at the labor movements across this country when, again, not one day strikes, not one day with a sign out there on the street corner, but labor movements, the Battle of Blair Mountain, the strikes that went on for days, for weeks, for months, where the governors would send National Guard troops to beat them, to shoot them for striking. That's when white folks that were poor and black folks and brown folks that were working with them, people all stuck together against who the true enemies were, the robber barons, the oligarchs. We scared them so bad. We made them understand that there was violence that could be enacted if they did not accede to our demands. Either the economic violence of not even just not going to work, there was sabotage. They would shut down factories. They would destroy the machines to make sure that the oligarchs could no longer make any profits. It's no wonder we're not taught about this history, but if you get a chance, go back and read about the labor history of the United States of America from 1870 to 1930, and you'll see what we're capable of. You'll see what can happen when we all on the bottom here band together and aren't distracted by the culture war issues of fighting someone else because they might love someone differently, their skin might be different, they worship differently, they speak a different language, but we all understood we were the workers, we were the underclass, we were the people. We the people. We're not going to tolerate being exploited, being abused, being left to die in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. Not being worked to death, worked 12 hours a day for 6 or 7 days a week. We fought for the 8-hour work week. We fought for the weekends. We fought for sick leave and paid leave. These weren't given to us. This was us all banding together, and they got wise. The oligarchs got wise. The fascists got wise. They understood they couldn't control us with violence. There was too many of us, not enough of them. They figured out how to control us through propaganda, through Fox television networks. They figured out how to divide us against one another with religious issues, with culture war issues, with racial issues. That's their religion. That's why they're on that holy war. Yeah, the foot soldiers in the MAGA movement, they might, you know, believe in Jesus, and Jesus wants everyone to be white, and women who have abortion should be punished, and the gays should be stoned to death, and so on. Maybe they actually believe that. But the guys on the top, the oligarchs on the top, it's just an effective tool for them. They believe in money. They believe in money and power. And if using some book written a couple thousand years ago gets the rabble below them to keep the rabble even farther below them in line, that's fine with them. They don't really believe that stuff, the Curtis Yarvins and Peter Thiels and all that. It's about power, and they want to keep us all separated. Take a look at that labor movement from 1870 to 1930 to see what we're capable of, and understand it's going to take a lot more sacrifice. It's going to take a lot more action on our part to make them give us what we want. They're explicit about it. They say, make America great again. In that phrase is implicit force. Make, to force something to be. And when they say again, they're telling you that they feel that there was some time in the past when it was great. And they're not talking about 2015 after the Obergefell decision. They're talking after the Dred Scott decision, 18, whenever that was, 70, something like that. That's where they want to go. They believe this is a country that was inspired by Jesus and manifest destiny to clear out the merciless Indian savages and to import the inferior Negro race and to expel the indigenous Mexican populations and to completely take over the continent from sea to shining sea to establish a white Christian nationalist homeland, a place where white Christian Protestant people could dominate. That's their vision. That's what they believe the country was founded for. They believe we're the wrong ones, that we are the ones breaking the contract by trying to make it so that everyone's equal and women and gays even aren't thrust away from our society, that they're welcomed with open arms. How crazy is that? They really see us as a satanic infiltration into what was meant to be, was ordained by God. It's about time our side started to see it that way, to understand if the Star Trek future is going to be, we're going to have to fight a lot harder for it. And that's the end of this joint, my friends. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Why do we keep doing this?
Oh, God, not again.
And is that absolutely necessary?
Well, a couple of Rest in Peace tributes up on my Radical Russ bass play-alongs. If you've been following the videos I post to my YouTube page, where it's basically bass karaoke. I play a song without the bass line in it, and then I play the bass line. So you can kind of hear what bass lines are, I guess. Anyway, the new ones up are for David Allen Coe with You Never Even Called Me By Your Name. And that was a good bass play along because David Allen Coe actually played the bass on that tune. So rest in peace to him. He passed away at the age of 86. And vocalist Alex Ligertwood from Scotland, Glaswegian. And he was the vocalist for Carlos Santana's band during his 80s comeback, sang on the hits Hold On and Winning. And so I covered Winning, put that up on the bass play-alongs. What an amazing vocalist. He passed away at the age of 79. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as RadicalRuss.com. And nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next week, take care of each other.
You're trying, you're